Municipal Utilities Commission meeting to order. Today is Monday, November 9th at 11:45 a.m. Does anybody have any changes to the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move into the consent agenda, which consists of the minutes from October 26th, as well as bill payments in the amount of $229,000 and some odd change. And look for a resolution for approval of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a resolution and a second. Any discussion on the consent agenda? I'm just looking through bill payments real quick. General Manager Heron on page 5. I see a couple of project updates. Just wondering if you can give us a real quick reminder on our dealings with Midwest Underground and what they're working on and how that's coming.
Midwest Underground, we have two contractors in town, Midwest Underground and ONS. And when we contract out the work between the two, ONS, basically their contract consists of burnt out cable, new services, whether it's residential, commercial, that's their obligation, responsibility in the contract. Midwest Underground basically takes care of aged cable replacement projects. We went from converting the residential area to replacement of our aged cable, three-phase cable, and they have been taking care of the replacement of the aged three-phase cable. With that said, on that one, we got County Road 5 and 3rd Avenue as a description. If I can turn that over to our engineer, Darren Smith, is in attendance here, if he could probably provide greater detail on that particular project, we have noted as County Road 5 and 3rd Avenue. Darren, is that for replacement of our ground, or did we roll some work over to them from ONS?
Yeah, I think this is probably ONS subcontracting to Midwest. I believe this was out in the Y project where the Y contractor exposed some cable and we had to go out there and lower it a little bit. So I'm pretty sure that's the one that they're working on there. But a lot of times if ONS doesn't have the equipment or the time to do things, they'll subcontract to Midwest, and that's how they get in there when it's not a direct replacement like John was talking about earlier.
Okay, thank you. All right, appreciate that update. Any further discussion on the resolution? All right, seeing none, Ms. Mathiason, if you could take roll, please.
Stanley. Commissioner Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Mabu?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Okay, that resolution passes. Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have our monthly financial reports. I'll turn that over to our Finance and Office Services Supervisor, Ms. Precker.
Thank you. Starting with the electric division, total operating revenues for September are down about $552,000. But if we look at just residential and commercial industrial, from prior year, we're down about $859,000 in that area. Down in operating expenses, overall, it's up about $205,000. However, if we just look at purchase power, that's up about $882,000 due to the plant shutdown and winter repairs. So overall retained earnings down about $737,000 from prior year. Moving on to the water division. Total operating revenues up about $379,000. But if we're just looking at residential and commercial industrial revenue, we're down about $39,000 when we factor in the 20% rate increase where we thought we would be. Overall retained earnings for water is up about $520,000 from prior year. For the heating division, nothing really significant to report there, just a little bit of work coming through there. And for all divisions, overall retained earnings down about $529,000 from prior year. And then we have the graphs.
All right, thank you for the report on the finances. Any questions, commissioners? All right, anything in the investment portfolio?
On the investment portfolio, it shows our month-end value for September at $34 million, and our related monthly or year-to-date rates or yields are listed as well.
And I'll let you close us out with the cost of power.
Okay, cost of power for September, it is slightly higher than last year at this time. About 1.5 cents higher than our 12-month rolling average, but no concerns there.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions? All right, thank you for the updates. Next on the agenda, we have our October wind turbine report. Facilities and Maintenance Supervisor, Mr. Marty.
Thank you. As you can see, the October wind report production was 675,543 kilowatt hours. Both turbines had good availability. Last few months has been pretty steady there, which brings us, if you flip to the next page, shows us the comparison over the last few years. Not the best months, not the worst. Just could have used a little bit more wind. And then total for 2020 to date, 5,592,054 kilowatt hours total produced.
Questions on that update? Doesn't look like it. I'll let you continue on with the blade update.
Okay. So we've got the issue with the blade bearing on wind turbine 4 that we had talked about back on the October 12th commission meeting. And with the request by the commission for additional information, we reached out to some different contacts and contractors in the wind industry. I have them listed there on page 2 of that PowerPoint. The folks that we reached out to, of course, just a quick rundown, Olympia Renewables, that's DeWind in Guymon, Oklahoma, the folks that bought DeWind. And then we have a relationship with Michael Cook, who's a former DeWind engineer. We reached out to Braun Intertech to inquire about some testing of those components, and they in turn got us in touch with the Concho Welding and Bar Field Services out of Texas. And then we wrapped up with Renew Energy out of Sioux Falls. Those are the folks that we've had do some work for us, including the blade repairs this past summer. So to kind of recap what all of those vendors, after discussions, none of them had seen this issue on a DeWind turbine to date. We looked into a replacement blade bearing availability. There is no availability of a replacement blade bearing. And as we walked through some of that, there's obviously limited stock of other turbine parts that we're finding as well. Tower 4 runs a Dorstern Zollern gearbox assembly, which has shown high failure rates and are also no longer available, and that the consensus is that the inspection and repair is not advised at this time. Part of that has to do with the next bullet point. They suggest that we could just continue to monitor and operate and monitor the wind turbine. The electronics in the wind turbine are such that they will basically detect any further damage, vibrations, those sorts of things. They're quite finicky as far as, you know, detecting an additional failure or further failure on that same part. The next page, we do have a repair option. When speaking with Renew Energy, they do have a machining company that could possibly make a blade bearing from scratch, basically. They would take our drawings and or most likely an old part from our turbine. They estimate each of those blade bearings would cost us about $30,000. And then the total cost to replace all three blade bearings on one turbine would be approximately $300,000. That would include your parts and labor and cranes and those sorts of things. So the staff recommendations, we'd recommend that we continue to operate the turbines and monitor the repaired blade bearing. like we're doing now with our weekly inspections, and electronically using the turbines, systems, and fail safes. And then we would revisit the turbine life cycle in 2025 as already planned out in the strategic initiatives. The turbines are entering, just a reminder, they're entering their 12th year of service, and they have a projected 20-year lifespan. And then we would also explore options for repowering or decommissioning in 2029 at the end of that 20-year life cycle, depending on how they're doing. So I'd gladly take some questions if you have them.
Kevin, I've got a couple questions. One regarding that gearbox, evidently there's no replacement parts for, and they have a high failure rate. If that goes, is that the end of a particular turbine?
Highly likely, yes.
Okay.
The other turbine has a Moventus gearbox in it, and that was originally manufactured in Finland. I just heard back from them this morning. They are going to DeWind or Olympia in Diamond has installed Moventus gearboxes in place of the Zollern gearboxes. There is some work to be done to the mounting frame to make them fit. They're a little bit bigger, which means taking the entire nacelle down and sawing out to make it fit and work in there. I reached out to Moventus last week and just got an email back this morning that they're still checking to see if they're available. As of now, they're not in production, and they are, what did she say? They're currently checking to see if the cast models and or components are still available. That's the last update that I have from them.
Okay.
Neither one of these gearboxes are spares on the shelf per se anywhere. Mm-hmm.
And then as to the bearing itself, there's mention that if there's further failure that the components would detect that and trigger an alarm. Would it auto shut down as well or only alarm?
Depends on the alarm. It's actually quite finicky. I talked to Cole earlier today. He mentioned that twice yesterday that one of the turbines had shut down. The cause yesterday, and we see this many times, is that like yesterday, for instance, the weather detecting equipment on top of the turbine would have probably caught a gust of wind from the side or something like that in the turbine. You know, it's just plumbing along, operating at 40 miles per hour wind speed, just having a heyday, and then it gets this side gust. The computer basically throws a glitch, and it'll put the system into either a brake mode, depending on the severity of the failure, and actually stop the turbine. It has to be manually reset. It can be done remotely with the laptop, depending on what the incident is. And that's pretty much how they handle any outage or fault, is they'll log in and look at it. They can see the data from those sensors, and if everything looks normal, they can attempt to restart it. Or they, certain ones, depending on the severity of it, have to be reset at the tower itself. So, long answer to short answer, yes, they detect quite a bit, actually. They're pretty finicky that way.
So one more question, a follow-up to that, being the sensitivity of the components in there and the fact that we accidentally found a bolt on the ground and then discovered a crack in the hub, was there an alarm that was overlooked that was triggered by those events, or did that simply not trigger an alarm when that took place?
That simply did not trigger an alarm. Just because of the, I'm assuming, and from visiting with these other vendors, the sheer number of bolts that hold that on there. A couple of the vendors, after looking at our photos, had felt that crack was probably there for quite a while. And that's based on the amount of grease that they found inside that cavity where those bolts were. That right now, that crack, since they've done the repairs, oozed a little grease out of it. It's pressurized grease inside there, re-greases those ball bearings. Just because of the amount of grease that they found, they said that this has probably been this way for years, and you would have just never noticed until you found a bolt laying on the ground.
Okay.
So.
All right. Thank you for the update. Commissioners, other questions?
So it's just pretty much keep running the turbines as is, and hopefully they don't fail?
Yes.
What is involved with repowering one of these?
We got some real initial info from Renew about repowering. We had asked about that, reading some different trade articles and those sorts of things. You can repower a turbine with the same or less output. So ours are 2 megawatts. We'd have to stay with 2 megawatt or below. And that's just because of the design and structural of the foundation and the tube. You can't, you know, put more weight on it than it's designed to handle. Initially, they're talking about $1 million a piece to repower if they can find a manufacturer that will. They're going to basically have to custom make a nacelle that will bolt to our bolt pattern on our tubes. So,
Kevin, can you provide a little bit more insight to what repowering means? Basically, that means stripping everything out other than your tower going up to the top. The blades, new unit on top, new guts in the bottom.
Rewiring the whole works.
Yeah, the only thing that would remain would be the tube going up. So.
Okay. Wouldn't have to reinforce concrete at the bottom or anything like that. So
correct.
Yeah.
Yep. As long as obviously you'd want to have that taken a look at and make sure it's structurally sound before mm-hmm. spending that kind of dollars. But
hope for the best.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Yeah. Quick question, Mr. Chairman. The life cycle, as you mentioned, is 20 years, and so far we have out of this 11 years. Do we actually, the money we spend it, do we get it? Does it pay itself, or we still have a lot of money because of the maintenance and all that sort of thing? That's still.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know how much you want to cover. I mean, we actually will have an update on that next month when I do my year-end report. Mm-hmm. But we found that they are expensive to operate, yes. I believe it was 19 cents per kilowatt last year was the number.
So does it get paid? I mean, because it seems to me as we see, you know, a lot of failures and a lot of repairs and a lot of, you know, parts that seems to be we're just kind of spending more and really not getting out of what we're supposed to. So seems to be it's just losing, although I don't have evidence to that, but just.
Commissioner, yeah. Very good questions. Typically, we cover that in our year-end updates.
Yeah.
So Kevin will get into more detail there, but just a little high level. Since commissioning, because they were both servers were running 18, 19 cents, that was asset cost included in the calculation. We remove our asset and interest costs associated with that. We're running probably just under 3 cents a kilowatt to produce power. So
it's still positive.
Well, they're there.
I hope we're there.
We're going to spend $1 million on repowering, and it's going to require us to do an in-depth financial look at that.
Good. Thank you.
Just to point out, too, on that year-end report, if I could ask, I don't recall last year when we got that, if the cost per power was just for the previous year or if we took a look at the overall cost of power in the 12 years they've been operating, but I'd like to perhaps see both if we could. All right, any other questions? All right, thank you, Kevin.
Welcome.
All right, next on the agenda, we have the Missouri River Power Supply Refund, and Ms. Precker, back to you.
Okay, so Missouri River will be refunding $17.2 million to its members. And this refund reflects their strong financial position. Checks will be distributed in early December. Our share of that refund is $316,975.25. That'll be automatically deposited in our power supply account. Staff's recommendation is to leave those funds in the power supply account to offset our purchased power supply costs. At present, based on power supply cost assumptions for October, November, and December, our power supply annual cost is $56.01. The threshold for applying the energy acquisition adjustment is $56. By applying the refund to the 2020 power supply cost, it will lower our average 2020 power supply to $54.86. Based on the assumptions, and no EAA adjustment will be assessed to our customers.
Appreciate that update. That's good news. I think this speaks to the financial strength of Missouri River currently, so that's a positive thing as well. Commissioners, any questions on this update? All right. Thank you, Andrea. Next, we have the Toshiba Transformer Inspection Update. Our staff electrical engineer, Mr. Smith.
Thanks, Chair Mattern. To give you a little background, we have two transmission substations, the Wilmer Sub and the Priam Sub. That's where power comes into our system. We then have five distribution substations where we give it out to our customers. So at that transmission substation, the Wilmer Sub, we have a power transformer manufactured in 1968. We call it the Toshiba Transformer, and we have a little story to tell on that. Well, before I get there, I'll explain the construction of a transformer a little bit better, too. On these power transformers, you got a main tank, steel, belt, and inside it, you got the windings that actually transform the voltage from high to low. That main tank holds about 13,000 gallons of oil. And then on the side of that, we have an LTC tank, which holds about 400 gallons of oil. And the reason we have an LTC is as our load picks up and drops out, we want to maintain a constant voltage. And so we need to add more windings into the circuit or take windings out of the circuit to keep that voltage stable. That's what the LTC does. So there's three wires going from the main tank into that LTC tank. What we found in April is that we had high oil in the LTC tank. Well, either something got into it or oil pushed from the main part into the LTC part. They did a visual inspection. They didn't see anything out of the ordinary on the visual inspection. We took an oil sample and we sent it in. And that's going to tell us if there's water in the oil or if there's been sort of internal arcing, which would cause damage inside. They didn't respond right away, so we knew that we didn't have an issue. Come June, they actually gave us the full report that said normal levels, nothing unusual present. So we continued to watch it. We actually drained some oil out so we weren't at risk of overflowing. And then we scheduled an internal inspection for the fall when our loads are down. We don't want to take an outage of that transformer on peak loads in the summer if we don't have to. So in September, Solomon came out. They drained the oil out of that LTC compartment. They noticed everything looked good. They let it sit drained overnight. They came back in the morning hoping to find where the oil would leak through from the main tank. Unfortunately, they weren't able to find anything. So what they did find is on the second page, I actually show you the picture of the LTC tank without the oil in it. There's a bunch of fasteners or nuts in there that hold that barrier board in place. They found some of those that were loose. Again, they didn't find any oil trace leaking through, but they tightened them up and we put it back in service. So we'll keep watching it. That's the best we can do right now. To give you a little background on the oil too, as the temperature changes, the volume of the oil will change. And when you're talking 13,000 gallons of oil, if you take that from 10 below Fahrenheit to 90 above Fahrenheit, you're actually increasing the volume by 500 gallons. So you can't really just watch the oil levels and know whether or not something is wrong, because the temperature will cause that oil level to change pretty significantly. So that's where we are on the Toshiba transformer. Any questions on that?
Doesn't look like it.
Quick question. The transformer, you said it was built in 1968?
Yep.
What is the lifespan on that? Is that forever or?
That's a good question. So in that era, things were overbuilt and they were built well. And so it's not uncommon for a transformer of this vintage to go 50 years, but you don't see them go much longer than that. And so it's been on our watch list. In fact, it's been on a replacement schedule in our 10-year capital improvement plan for quite a while. We had the Priam substation that kind of took priority over that because it's better to have redundancy than than just one, all your eggs in one basket. And then we've got this second round of transmission expansion happening at the Wilmer sub that will actually add another transformer to the system and make the system more robust. So we have deferred a replacement of this particular transformer because we made improvements elsewhere that are a better bang for our buck in terms of reliability. But it is still on our to-do list to revisit that. And as I talk with planners, Missouri River does a lot of planning in our area, and also Great River Energy does planning for the electric grid in this region. They are telling me that a second transformer at Priam substation is actually probably a better option than replacing the Toshiba at the Wilmer sub.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
Good question. Any other questions? All right. Thank you for that update, Jim. And I'll let you continue on with our next item on the transmission interconnection agreement with GRE.
All right, thank you. So Wilmer Utilities and GRE are very closely tied because we have a lot of equipment that is interconnected. So what that means is we have transmission lines that change ownership from Wilmer Utilities to Great River Energy and then back to Wilmer Utilities, back to Great River Energy. So that happens 8 times throughout our system. And we've got various agreements in place to govern how operations are handled at those points. One example is a transmission ownership agreement that was created back in 1985. That was before I was born. And so things like the MISO market didn't exist and weren't even really a concept back then. And so we have a lot of areas where information is dated or no longer relevant. In order to stay with the times, there's been supplements and addendums and supplements on top of addendums to these contracts. So GRE came to us and said, you know, would you be interested in updating the interconnection agreement so that it's current with the way operations are done right now? We agreed. They gave us a draft of this transmission to transmission and transmission to load interconnection agreement. Staff and legal representation from both Wilmer and GRE has reviewed and approved this agreement. Exhibits to the agreement, which detail who owns equipment and who's responsible financially and repairs and maintenance, things like that are in exhibits. Those haven't been finalized yet. But at this point, we're requesting authorization to execute the agreement upon satisfactory completion of those exhibits. And we did include the agreement in your packet information too. Any questions?
So one little bit of history on this particular agreement. I know probably a couple years back, time flies, but when we were looking at doing some expansion and transmission and so forth, there was a little bit of disagreement with how much ownership we had and so on and so forth between us and GRE. Does this agreement help spell some of that out a little bit?
Yes, it will speak to that quite well. And that's kind of the purpose or one purpose of the transmission to transmission interconnection agreement is to really define who owns what and at what point does it change. Yeah.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions on the agreement? If not, I would look for a resolution for approval.
I have a couple questions.
Commissioner Blake, go ahead.
This agreement was drafted by GRE?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And you had input into the drafting of it, or did just Jared just send it out?
No, we've actually had several revisions over a year's worth of back and forth on this one, and both Spiegel and McDermott and Mr. Robert Scott and his firm have reviewed.
That was my next question. What attorneys did the review of it?
Yep. So those two firms have reviewed it. They both had input that we brought back to GRE, and there was some negotiations back and forth, but in the end, it's something that both of our attorneys approve.
Okay.
Commissioner, do you believe there's one section pulled out of this agreement, too, because of our grandfather agreement? The grandfather agreement is actually in the tag. We received notice from GRE 2024.
Yep.
2024 goes through a distributed government keep our grandfather agreement intact and take advantage of the low pricing law.
Okay. And being that we have Mr. Scott on the line with us and he's had a chance to review this, I'll take the opportunity just to ask, is there anything, Mr. Scott, in here that you think is noteworthy that ought to be pointed out to us, or any concerns that you had that remained at all? Did we lose our attorney? Mr. Scott, are you still with us?
Mr. Scott, a little background. It's probably been in excess of a year since Mr. Scott looked at it. Mr. Scott was involved with all the insurance pieces on it.
Okay.
Making sure that our liability that was identified as far as the claim goes in the agreement followed statutory guidelines. So
okay.
That was kind of the extent of his involvement in the agreement.
Pretty limited then.
Yeah, he typically speaks to the Minnesota statutes that apply to the agreements, and then Spiegel McDermott talks more to the transmission industry pieces.
Gotcha. Okay. I see we're still working on getting him back on the line, which is fine. We can continue on. So, commissioners, any other questions? Again, if not, I'd look for a resolution for approval to the agreement.
So moved. Second.
We have a resolution and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take roll, please.
Commissioner Matter?
Aye.
Mabul?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
That resolution passes. Thank you. Thank you, Jaron. All right, next on the agenda, we have our water service line replacement policy amendment, and I'll start off with General Manager Heron, and if Mr. New wants to step in, he can as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. What we have here, typically we bring our policies to the commission at the end of the year for amendments and modifications to them. However, Al is working with a customer out in the field that insists that they do not and cannot get the money to replace a water line that is leaking, and has asked if we would be willing to help them with that cost, basically pick it up, put it on the tax rolls. So what we have in front of you here today, the first document is changes to our operational policy, section 2.7, liens and assessments, and we're looking at adding section B. If you scroll down the page, failing water service lines. Language that you have there, Mr. Scott has reviewed and added to it, modified it for legal purposes. Commissioner Magnuson is not here today. It was his recommendation that we draft it as such for the terms. Basically, the terms consist of 1 year for each $1,000 of cost, not to exceed 5 years. So, meaning if it costs $1,000 to replace that service line, 1 year. If it costs $5,000, they would have the full 5 years. If it costs $10,000 to replace it, it would still only be 5 years. So, that would be the relationship between cost and payback. And the other part here is the 9%. 9%, if you recall, we said at District Heat, for anybody that wanted to finance at District Heat, we have 9% as well in here. If the commission supports that or the commission wants a different rate, we would state it here in the agreement. The other document that we have, that would be the waiver that we would have to have the property owner sign it, the waives their right to appeal the assessment. Basically, the property owner is agreeing and requesting that we put it on their property taxes, but in order to do that, we need them to waive their right to an appeal, challenging the charges after we are complete. Again, Mr. Scott has reviewed this, basically drafted it, and it's ready for adoption. So with that said, what's going on the field? If you have questions regarding that, I would turn those questions over to Alan Neer. So if you have questions on the assessment, I definitely will be able to.
Thank Thank you, John. And to clarify on the policy that we would be amending here, that's still open to future amendment, at least on an annual basis. We can take a look at adjusting interest rates or terms if we needed to, and so on and so forth.
Commissioner Matt, that would be correct.
Okay.
Each year we review our policies, and we felt that that was out of line and needed to be modified, we need to do that.
Okay. Commissioners, I open it for discussion.
Yeah, I have a quick question, and I don't know if this is quick or not, but I didn't understand very clearly. Is this the water line that's the property of the homeowner, or is it outside of the public? Just what a...
Commissioner Mabuba, that's a very good question. That would be for the homeowner's share of the water line, which would be their responsibility. And their responsibility starts at the property line into their house. So it would be for that section, for the property line into the house.
But the property owner also pays some sort of taxing sum? You know, I don't know, to be honest with you, how it's breaking down, but I'm just wondering, it's just why the property owner is taking care of, since we have already, isn't this supposed to be included with the maintenance and replacement and all that sort of thing in one unit, rather than giving the responsibility of the property owners?
I'm understanding your question, Commissioner Mabu. You're asking if the property owner or if the utility is not responsible for that service line all the way into the building.
My question is, I think the utility is supposed to be, or the city, whomever is taking care of, that's supposed to be responsible for that main water line, since they're putting it and replacing it and maintaining it. So why, again, if something breaks down, then the homeowner has to...
The city, when there's a street project, the city replaces the water main. The water mains need to be replaced, and that is in the past anyway, has been picked up by the city.
Okay.
Through either the $4 charge that's on your bill, and or property tax levies assessments. That's for the water main replacement. What we're talking about here is a service line that runs from the water main into everyone's building.
Okay.
So by policy, the utility pays for repairs for the water service line from the main to the property owner.
Okay.
And then from the property to the property line.
Okay.
Then from the property line into the building, into the house, or you know, whatever type of building it may be, the property owner is responsible for section.
Okay, got it.
So
that's the section you're talking about now.
Yeah,
okay.
And this agreement would be to aid the property owner to replace their service line from the property line into their building.
Okay. Thank you. That's clear. Thank you.
Good question.
Good. Yes. Thanks. Any further discussion? All right. If not, I'd be looking for a resolution to approve the amendment in the policy agreement.
So moved. I'll second.
I have a resolution and a second. Further discussion?
You know,
Commissioner Erickson.
Does it matter? How did we come up with, how did we land on 9%? I guess as the annual rate.
Okay. The commission can set that. There's no statutory guidelines for that 9%. The 9% is what the commission set for the district heat customers that may need or want to utilize financing through the utilities. And the reason it was set at 9% was due to the fact that the commission didn't feel that they're in the banking business. That's what we got financial institutions for. Mm-hmm. So when I was talking with this agreement with the commissioner, whether we should have a planning committee to talk about it or not, we arrived at those terms as the starting point, and we used that as a basis, and they, you know, we said, okay, let's start with 9%, present 9% to the commission as a whole, see if we want to stay there or if we want something different. So It'd be changed, but that's kind of how we arrived at this fall, but it was done with this year.
Okay, thank you.
Good there?
Yep, I'm good.
Okay. Further discussion?
Yeah, I think if we can amend that, I mean, 9%, you know, it's kind of, because we know that the district heat is kind of different comparing to the water main breakdown. So I was wondering if that could be even maybe more lenient to the property owners since they're already paying some sort of, you know, what's for the house that they include, or if that could be discussed more.
We can sure have the discussion. What I would say, Commissioner Mabrouk, the $4 that we are paying to the city, though, keep in mind that that is for the street line, and so that since this is part of the private line, it is different. Further, I would encourage us to consider the fact that, yes, we do not want to compete with the banks. I don't think we want to incentivize our customers to utilize this option. It is kind of intended to be a last resort, so I think that that's an important consideration. But if you feel that we should have further discussion on this, I would entertain that.
Yeah, I agree with you, you know, but this is something, I'm assuming, you know, something by nature, you know, triggered by some sort of, you know, breakdown by unforeseeable things. So it will be, we don't know each homeowner, what will be their challenge in terms of, you know, but, you know, I really don't know this very much in terms of, for sure we don't need to compete with the banks, that's correct, but, you know, just I'm looking for the homeowner's interest in a way of how we can help if something like that comes up.
Certainly.
You know, maybe other commissioners feel I'm okay with that too, so.
Mr. Herron, not to put you on the spot with this, but do you have a rough idea of how many customers are dealing with this kind of replacement on an annualized basis?
That's a good question, Commissioner Matter, and maybe you can lean on Alan for that. You might have a faulty survey, you might have a fault on it, somebody we're dealing with just this summer since, you know,
they do vary.
Sure.
They do vary year to year, just like the normal breaks we have in the system. But it seems like, from what I've seen, the COVID year that we're having in 2020, this is additional stress on those repairs and those things. We've had four or five this fall, and of those, three have asked and requested that they be able to lean on us up to this point. So if we project that out, we're talking maybe 3 to 5 in a year's time.
Okay. So it is, I mean, relatively speaking, that's pretty minimal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for the update. Commissioners, is there an appetite to want to look at adjusting this rate or making any change, or is everybody comfortable with what's being proposed?
I think we should leave it as proposed. As you say, it's always, we can review it on a yearly basis, but like you say, I think this is, it's a benefit to our customers to be able to have access, to be able to get a line repaired, and we want to make sure those water lines are in good repair so they're not leaking, and that would cost us additional. But I don't think we want to get into the banking business, the whole thing, so.
And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to review this as needed and make adjustments. Commissioner Weber, any thoughts?
I would agree with Commissioner Babu. I think 9% is a little steep. I would entertain looking at that as a group.
Would you want to see an adjustment yet today before we approve this, or would you want to approve this and then consider making an adjustment in our policy reviews?
We could talk about it today.
Okay. Do you have a rate in mind that you'd like to entertain?
I do not.
Mr. Herron, in your discussion with Commissioner Magnuson, do you know whereabouts private banking rates currently are at, or what the proposal would be there?
Commissioner Madden, that's a good question. I do not know. I just know that Commissioner Magnuson has indicated it should, you know, be consistent with district heat. As Commissioner Mabu indicated, you know, we have two different applications and needs here.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely can table this and bring it to the planning committee for further discussion if that's the wishes of the commission. However, Alan is working with the customers, he indicated out there that's waiting for it to today's meeting to see if that's an option, maybe that leaking service fund. So, really, that's a correct statement, I guess. So, I'll take a commission. If the commission wants to table it, that's what we'll inform the property owner that they're, you know, going to figure out how to get that line replaced on their own for this fall. And this will be coming back in front of the commission at a later meeting.
Okay, real quick, Commissioner Erickson, I want to give you an opportunity to weigh in if you had additional thoughts on this.
I guess you could say I'm torn, just because of where other rates are at, you know, that we have the option of reviewing this and we can come more in line with you know, that the rates are so low currently in a lot of other places, so that we could shift annually down with that or up if needed. But I also don't necessarily think 9%, you know, is out of the question, just based on the risk and, you know, because it'll be those that can't have financing other places. So,
good points. Commissioner Mabu, with you kind of raising this question, do you have a rate in mind that you think would be reasonable?
Well, unfortunately, I don't. I don't have any rate because I'm not very much familiar in financial world and how it works. But it would be really great if we can do more research and see what other towns do or other places, because I'm sure there is something that other cities maybe implement in that regards, or if maybe planning committee can look at it and just get a recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Neer, if I could invoke you one more time, the particular customer that we are dealing with, how severe is the leak? How long has it been going on? What kind of timeline are we
looking at? This particular leak has been going on for a while, but the caveat here with this, the shrinking end of the year, we have had the service off. They are not living in the house at this time, but they do want to be able to get back into the residence. I don't have a time frame. I haven't spoken with them for a week here. They were trying to acquire some money possibly from HRA at that time. So the service is off. If it goes a little bit longer, I think it would be all right. But we are up against the end of the season where it's going to cost us that much more money to do a replacement in this case. It is a galvanized service line. So and a fairly long one at that, so it would be out to the curb and into the house.
Okay. Thank you.
Chairman Mayor.
Commissioner Weber.
I believe we have a motion and a second.
Resolution, yes.
For the policy change, so I would recommend that we approve it as is and revisit the interest at a further date to, if time is of the essence for this customer, to get that moving forward.
Okay. Commissioner Erickson, you?
I was essentially going to echo that.
Okay.
That, passing with something of no more than 9%, you know, pending. You know, just something to get, that we can get it through, to get them an idea of what it would be.
Okay. So what I will intend to do is to call a question on the particular resolution that we have, and then I'd like to follow up with taking this rate structure back to the next planning committee meeting to look at readdressing interest rates on this as soon as possible. Okay? All right, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take roll on the resolution, please.
Certainly. Commissioner Mabu?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
Leek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Matter?
Aye. The resolution passes. Thank you, everyone. And I'll expect that to go to planning as soon as possible then to readdress the interest rate on that policy. Okay. Thank you for the discussion, everyone. Next on the agenda, we have a review of the educational topics for 2021. Mr. Herring.
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. It's that time of year again, end of year development. 2021 is staring us in the face. We're starting to plan and prepare for next year. And typically, we have a list of, you know, we call them educational topics for the commissioner that staff presents to the commission. We have a little over half the meetings are filled up with topics. We have a number of open. There's probably seven of them, I think, is what we call them, that are open. So are there additional areas or items of interest that the commission would like to see added to this so that staff can prepare accordingly and present the appropriate information to the commission as we go through the year?
commissioners, looking at the schedule that's laid out before us, is there any initial recommendations now? I mean, certainly we can add some in the future, but if there's anything that jumps out in anybody currently, I would entertain those at this time. All right. Hearing none, I think we'll move forward with that, and Mr. Heron, we'll let you know if any other ideas come up. I'm sure staff will have some more as the year goes on, too. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next we have Mr. Schmidt's Silent Impact Resolution video for November. And Ms. Johnson, anything you want to do for an introduction on this one?
We are on number 11 of 12 of these presentations from Joe. I have found them very beneficial for staff. I hope you guys have also, and I do look forward to his final message. They're always good to go back and review. And again, I thank the commission for allowing us to have Joe here to the encouragement for staff throughout the year.
Thank you. For that, we'll have a video.
Hi, everybody. Joe Schmidt here with your impact resolution for the month of November. And in November, we're going to concentrate on joy. Now, a lot of people confuse joy and happiness. Happiness is an external feeling. Joy is an internal feeling, something you feel deep down. I found joy this past weekend in a very unusual place. It was at a funeral for a friend. Jack Brown was a lifelong friend of mine. He was a great athlete. He won a state championship in shot put and track, went to the University of Wisconsin, where he won 8 Big Ten titles. He represented the U.S. of A. in many international competitions. He would have been an Olympian, but he was injured right before the Olympic trials. Jeff had a great career. After he was done throwing the shot put, he became a teacher, a coach, and an administrator. And one of the young men that he was coaching at one point happened to be deaf. Jeff wanted to coach him better than he was coaching him. So on his own, he went out and learned sign language. On his own. Who does that? Well, people who think about others first do that. People who care about others do that. People who make an impact do that. You see, in all my grief and sadness this past weekend, we were able to find joy because of stories like that. You know, Mr. Rogers always said, in tragedy, you should look for the helpers. Well, in grief and sadness, and maybe even in this time of COVID, look for the joy. And if you can't find the joy, see if you can create your own joy by thinking of somebody else first, by helping somebody else. Find that joy. Yes, I'm sad, and yes, I feel grief, but I feel joy knowing the impact that my buddy Jeff Brown had on the world. Your impact resolution for this month, joy. Joy to the world.
Very good. We can all use a little more joy. Thank you. All right. Moving.
I have a question. Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry, before we go next, I know that next will be the general manager's report. I don't know, but I just want to share with you, commissioners, I've received 3 letters from an anonymous person. You know, I don't know if you share that with me or not. Assuming, you know, because there's no name or nothing on it, it's just that one of them came to my residence on October 30th and the other one came October 19th. And it's very similar. One says Labor Committee and the other would say Commissioners and the other would say Committee, just as a title and no name signed. So I was wondering if you, as a commissioner, received that or it's only me who's getting these letters.
I have personally not received any.
And the same, I have not received any.
I have.
You have?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I guess I would request at this time that be brought forward to a Labor Committee meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Are you comfortable with that? Thank you. All right, next we'll move into the General Manager's Report.
Thank you, Commissioner Manner. The first item on here is our legislative rally for 2021. That's coming up March 1st through March 3rd. That will be held virtually again this year, so we do not have to go out to D.C. So if anyone has time, please let Beth know. She'll register you. With that said, being that it's virtual, there's no registration fee as well either. So that'll be our APPA 2021 legislative rally. Other than that, additional meetings coming up, both for the Planning Committee as well as the Labor Committee. Feel with that, that would conclude my report unless there's questions. Any additional questions?
John, regarding planning, is there a further meeting coming up on union negotiations, or where are we at with that?
That'll be the Labor Committee. We will be having a meeting on the week of the 16th, I believe, is it Monday? We're hoping to have a meeting that week. We're still pulling information together at staff level. We've got additional union information pulled together, as well as health insurance information. So as soon as we have the information all together, we'll be reaching out to the Labor Committee for another.
Okay, thank you. All right, anything else to come before the commission today? Matt, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We are now adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Good.